I hereby introduce to you Mr. Michael Veazey.
Hey, 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 welcome to Amazing FBA, the place to be for UK-based Amazon entrepreneurs. I'm your host, Michael Veazey. Welcome to the show. Today's episode is brought to you by the 10K Collective. The 10K Collective is a collection of men and women who are doing at least $25,000 a month on Amazon in the UK, US, Europe, doesn't matter, but that is the figure as a minimum. Now, why that figure? Because it means you get to meet with like-minded people who are serious about Amazon, who are doing well, and who are ambitious to do better rather than knocking around with newbies, which isn't going to help you if you want to scale up from six figures a month to seven figures or whatever you're ambitious to do, four to five figures. We have people who are doing up to around the quarter of a million a month mark. And as I say, the lowest is 25K. So it's still quite a big spread, but we have amazing things that get shared. You will get 30 minutes each, minimum of 20, 25, even in a really busy month. And there's only 8 to 12 people at any given meeting. So what do we cover in the meetings? Well, we cover topics from how to stay in stock, make more money by not missing out and not being out of stock, dominating a market and the mindset needed, handling whole container loads, how to predict stock needed, for example, how to get a product on primetime British TV for free, as one of our members did back at Halloween last year. So these are not prescribed by me and it's not a set course. It is simply what comes up, what you need to handle right now to move your business forward. It's very simple, robust format. It's doing really well. We've got great loyalty from the members. I think out of 10 people that have joined it so far, about 8 are still with us after several months, which is a real testament to the fact that they're getting value and there's a great feel of community and we have a lot of fun. We take business seriously, but we also try not to take ourselves too seriously. We have a lot of fun. We're very open and we have a lot of serious debates that actually result in people doing stuff and taking action, like opening up in America, like going to Germany, like, you know, doubling their orders. I mean, serious action takes place as a result of these meetings. And it's also good fun. You'll need to be able to get to London as well as doing 25,000 a month minimum, roughly in dollars. And it's application only. So if you want to check that out, go to amazingfba.com/mastermind. Make sure you click through to the 10K Collective page rather than applying for the Zero to Hero Mastermind, which is just for those who are just starting out. Thanks very much for listening. Now, on with the show. The next thing then, the logical thing, once you've managed to sort of break the spell that Amazon has and to acknowledge also that it is incredibly powerful for launching stuff fast and getting market validation, which is not to be sniffed at by anyone's stretch of anyone's imagination. And quick cash flow is also incredibly important. And if you're losing $10 million a month or whatever, that's a seriously ugly situation that none of us want. So that said though, yeah, okay, if we acknowledge and we break through the Amazon thing that is actually doable to get Shopify, how on earth do we go around getting traffic? Because that to me seems like one of the biggest nightmares that put me off going further into this more immediately, or has put me off so far.
Yeah. So this is the top of mind question for people. And so I have done training on this. I've dug into this as deep as I can. And basically the research that I've done, and I open this to criticism and I open it to other people's opinions, but in my research, I found 9 ways you get traffic off the internet. There are 9 methodologies for referral traffic, and I'm happy to rattle them off. But I mean, in general, there is a finite number of ways in which traffic floats around the internet. And so the question is, do you build campaign systems and strategies to tackle each one of those? The answer could be yes. The other thing though, the shortcut, the hack that I've been teaching now for a couple years to our Inner Circle students and have a Udemy course on it, and we teach this strategy to everybody we work with, is the ultimate hack, in my opinion, is contests.
Ooh.
Running contests on your own standalone site, as the home base for it, basically jumpstarts 4, 5, 6 of these, traffic sources. And if it's okay, I'll mention the 9, and then we can anywhere you want to go with them, I'm happy to go. But contests to me is sort of the macro. So if you think of the 9, and we've got, I can show the visual at some point if you want to have it on the show notes or whatever, but the 9, let me just mention them. Email marketing, of course, most people would know, and maybe people know almost all of these, but I'll just organize them for
us. Yeah, please do. And since you mentioned show notes, just because this is going to be a bit more of a detailed thing, which might work better, I would really encourage you folks, for any of the more complex discussions, to get the show notes, because they will really, really, we do very, very detailed notes. We take a lot of time and trouble over those, and they'll really help you. So go to amazingfba.com/Jason M for Miles, just to clarify that. So yeah, do rattle them off. I think it's good to clarify the big picture of this.
And there's no particular order, but whatever. So email marketing, organic search, what I call branded browsing, which means the customer just types the URL into their browser. That's called direct typing of the URL. So I refer to it as branded browsing. Fourth one, organic social, then organic referral, then paid social, paid search, paid referral, and paid display. That's 9 sources of internet traffic. And I think I've had people throw things at me, and we can generally always categorize it into one of these 9. But I'm open to, adding to the list. But I think it's 9. And so then the question is, for example, if a contest is run, how many of those can a contest catalyze? And we present this to our students as like a flywheel. And the diagram, when you see what we're talking about, the show notes, it's like a flywheel on an engine. And so the idea is, if you can get one of these working in support of your website, let's say email marketing. Well, as soon as you can get email marketing working, you can ask everybody to follow you on Instagram. And then you've got organic social. As soon as you got a following on Instagram, you can pay on Instagram for paid placements. Well, then you've got 3 of the 9, right? You've got the email, you've got the organic social, and you've got paid social. So you get the idea that these sort of work synergistically to fuel each other and spin up together. And a contest done well on your website can push these buttons really quickly. You can, in a contest, for example, have people enter by following you on Instagram, following you on Pinterest, giving you their email address, sharing it with their friends, on and on. You can advertise your contest on Facebook. So there's so many ways in which a contest helps sort of catalyze this. And as we've seen in our one-on-one sessions in our Inner Circle program, this just works. I mean, when we have students actually set up a contest, they almost invariably come back and say, wow, I got 442 email addresses. I am blown away. It works.
So I love, again, this concept of the flywheel. Is there something else? I've been reading an awful lot of books about business recently, just desperately searching really for a way I'm supposed to synthesize, put together my own kind of business model in some way that is not just recreating something on Amazon, partly because I feel I've got a responsibility to people who are following me and, maybe paying for coaching, but also the ones who consume the free content like this. Yeah. And also more for my own sanity as well as a business person, having so that I can have the feeling that I've got an asset which is future-proof to some degree. Now, the flywheel thing is fascinating because that comes from Jeff Bezos himself hired Jim Collins, didn't he, to talk through the flywheel concept from good to great or something like that, or built
exactly
to last.
Right.
Tell us a bit more about how that applies in this context. So I understand that the contests can be a really powerful reason to give up your information as a shopper or a surfer, I suppose, if you're coming from Facebook. But how do these actually fuel each other? I understand that you could say, follow me on Pinterest and we'll release this code to you, or give us your email address, which is the commonest thing in the world, and we'll send you to a place where you get the code. And then, and that's been used for Amazon. I mean, Facebook ads to, give us the email in exchange and then on to Amazon with the code is a fairly proven method now. But how do they fuel each other? That's the bit I'm not getting yet.
So to the example, let's say you've got your website set up, your Shopify site. Let's say you say, okay, I'm just going to start with a contest. I'll use a third-party tool to set it up, and I don't have any following. I have nobody, right? Literally, my mom follows my work on my whatever, right? So set up a contest, advertise it on Facebook, and have people, visibly see it through what would be called paid social in my category of 9, right? Mm-hmm. So you're using paid social right off the top. And we have a case study actually on the Winning on Shopify site that is one of our Inner Circle members. He did, in 5 weeks, he did 15,000 email addresses collected and scores of social media followers on the various platforms. he ultimately used it to launch a $1.2 million Kickstarter campaign. His name's Pat Meyer. He shares exactly what he does. He shows the screen flow of his ads. And so for example, if you got nothing, you could set up a contest and start with paid Facebook ads using paid social as one strategy. And then you've got an email address list that grows from that. And so your second contest that comes down the road, let's say a month later or 6 months later, you say, I'm doing another contest. That works so good. You email all your people on your list. Hey, you entered my first contest and I'm doing another one. Sorry if you didn't win because, you know, Bobby won and he's so happy. I'd love to have you enter again and tell all your friends. Well, so then you've catalyzed email marketing and supported your contest. Your contest is only going to grow. It's only going to get better. So
that sounds pretty powerful stuff. I mean, I have to say that getting 15,000 emails in what, 5 weeks is a pretty amazing result. Presumably, yeah. He would have spent a pretty healthy sum of money on Facebook ads.
He actually tells us the numbers, and I think it was like 200. It was insanely low. When he said the number, I was like, you've got to be kidding me. I think it was a couple hundred bucks.
That does sound just crazy low.
I mean, I'm telling you.
That's
contest right to your target audience. Like, and back to your use case for orchestra leaders. If you got a contest right, you would sign up half the orchestra leaders in America or in the UK or wherever. If you get the prize right and if you nail sort of the tactic of that, it will catalyze your ideal customers to, you know, become your fans, followers, customers.
Wow.
That's the answer, man. I mean, that it works. And student after student, you know, and a lot of the teachers online will try to sell you stuff like, oh, Facebook advertising is the answer, or Instagram is the answer, or YouTube's the answer. And really what I like to do is step back and say, wait. Each of those, for example, was just social media. Well, there's eight other categories of traffic. And so to me, contest is like this macro idea that, again, sort of jumpstarts four or five, six of these various channels.
Yeah. And I think what you're thinking about there is the reason why people should do anything. And actually the channel is one thing, but people get a bit obsessed with the channel. I mean, it's the same with Amazon. We get obsessed with Amazon. I know a lot of Amazon sellers that are getting a bit obsessed with Facebook ads, and to some extent with great reason. Facebook ads are an amazingly effective way of driving traffic, and Amazon's an incredible place to both get conversions, and also once you start ranking organically, if you can kick that off, to get Shopify, to get eyeballs. But what they're missing is, what's my reason to click in the first place? And I think contests is your answer, and that makes a lot of sense to me. But I mean, coming back to these numbers just a second, let's say it was $200 for the sake of argument. It doesn't really matter. It's 1,000. You got 15,000 emails for spending $200. I mean, by my maths, that means you're spending about 1.3 cents per lead, which is just unbelievably insane. So how on earth did he do that?
That is about right, the right math. In my demos that I show, because in the course we do, and I'm not trying to sell people in the course, I'm happy to talk about any of this just, you know, now, but the course we go into my examples, but in my examples, I'll walk through the math on my weekly contest, because we do several contests a week on Pixie Fair. And one of them, I do the math and I basically get, if you added up all the social actions, a retweet, a following on Twitter, a following on Pinterest, an email sign up, it's like 8 cents a social action. And so his was, you know, in that math you just showed, like one cent or a cent and a half. The answer is he nailed his contest prize. And I'm happy to share the detail. He created this thing that's a flat pack table. It's called the table of ultimate gaming, and it's for like board game people. And as it happens, that's a whole community. There's like a whole niche. So he had gone, for example, to one of the big trade shows in Las Vegas for board game enthusiasts, and had the table there, and had some niche famous people actually like demo it a little bit at the conference and played games on it. He got them on video. All that was baked in, so like a little bit of social proof. All that was baked into his contest, like on the landing page. And I believe he used Wishpond. I always tell people to use Rafflecopter, but you know, there's third-party tools, and we list, again, there's a whole list of them you can use. But so he nailed that. He had a very targeted Facebook campaign to start with. And the Facebook campaign, you know how Facebook advertising works, is if you sort of suck at the match to market, it's expensive. But if you get super dialed in and your relevance score is, you know, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, then Facebook will reward you with much, much, much lower conversion expense on your ads. And so he nailed that part too. And it catalyzed his whole company. And now he's got this business opportunity that's basically like flat packed furniture in that niche.
That's an amazing story. I mean, yes, I this is in a way quite reassuring, because some of the things I'm always banging on about general principles, like message to market match, is completely validated by this to an insane degree. But also, one of the people we had on, Rick Cesari, who was behind the, there's a very quiet, very modestly spoken marketing genius behind things like the George Foreman grill and, you know, the Glean Green grilling machine and all that stuff, and GoPro and stuff, was talking about video marketing. And again, this sort of combines a couple of different things into a sort of, talking flywheel, this is a business model that you can piece together that starts to make amazing sense, which you've got social proof based on some video marketing. You've got influencer marketing in there because you've got the influencers within this niche. And then you've got an incredible message to market match based on relevance and targeting. And it's the combination of the things that seems to give it sort of rocket fuel. That's absolutely fascinating.
Exactly. It's exactly right. It's like a meta idea. It's like you're throwing a concert that you sell tickets for, you sell merch for, you sell, it's like doing the event that makes it all work in a way. And yeah, I mean, and we've seen the people who I have in defense of how it couldn't work, like the naysayers version of, I'll play that part for a minute. I've had people who tried this and didn't continue doing contests, but it wasn't because their contest didn't work. It was actually because they didn't want to. It revealed business flaws that they had personal hangups related to, back to what we were talking about before. Like, they didn't want to be the front person for their brand. They didn't want to do email marketing. They didn't want to have a social handle that was them tied to their product or brand. I mean, like, back to the fundamentals, those are the people that a contest won't work for. You can't be a ghost in the machine. I mean, you could try, but those are the ways in which it could fall apart. But if you're passionate about your product, your brand, and you want to build something, I would highly encourage people to try contests on or off Shopify. I mean, that's the platform. Is you can do this all in support of your Amazon selling, for goodness sakes.
Absolutely. Well, I'm just, again, this is part of what I'm always trying to tell people these days, is that you can break apart traditional business models and use the bits that work. For example, everyone thinks of an Amazon business, and what, I mean, there's a flaw in that title in the sense of, are you a brand builder or not? In which case, if it's 100% on Amazon, you don't own a business anyway. Yeah. But that aside, I mean, you can send traffic there. I mean, think people, because Amazon does so much at the same time, it's easy to get confused. They're an amazing traffic source because all the shoppers are there, but you don't have to be there. You could go to Facebook. They're an amazing place to sell stuff because their conversion percentages are so high because people are have their credit cards and they trust the brand. But again, you could, if you want, shove it over to Shopify, and they're amazing at fulfillment, but you can do that yourself as well. So you can kind of mix and match. And I think people get obsessed with particular channels, like, is it Shopify now? Was it eBay 10 years ago? Is it Amazon? Is it Facebook? But actually, I really am coming to believe more and more that the strategy, abstract and, you know, pretentious as that can sound, I actually believe it's the strategy that's driving stuff, not the platforms. And what you've just said is just so gobsmacking to me that I cannot avoid you can't avoid those numbers. 15,000 email signups for a couple of $100 is just, I if anyone who hasn't tried to sweat to get email signups, I can't tell you how insane those numbers are. I mean, I'd be pretty happy to be, you know, like an amazing FBA that the earnings per subscriber is reasonably decent so far, around the sort of $9 mark. Traditionally, it's around $1. And obviously, in selling things like mentoring package, which is £300 or a few $100 a month, which is way more than any physical product I'm selling. But nevertheless, you know, if I could get it down to under $1, that would still be an amazing result. So a cent is just insane. So I think this is just, if nothing else, everyone should really go and check out that case study. Where can they find that case study with the
patent? Right, it's actually right on winningonshopify.com homepage.
Winningonshopify.com.
It's a full hour session with Pat Meyer, that's his name. And then in our social contests course, we repackaged his hour and kind of cut it up in sections. And we have a lot of other content in that course as well, just sort of strategy level walkthroughs. I think it's 4 hours of content.
Wow. And is that behind a sort of paywall? Is that a sort of paid course, or is that, can people get the basics of that for free or something? Or
actually get 3 free videos, right? Just an email opt-in is the only thing required. And then you could watch Pat's hour on the website too. So the course add supplemental to that, but you'd get probably 80% of the gist of this if you just went through our free content on the site. So
absolutely, and I would encourage anyone. Look, there's loads of people, myself included. We give like 90. They sell, you know, give away the farm and sell the farmhouse. We all give away on this show a ton of value, and that you know doesn't mean you shouldn't explore the places where people want to upsell you or get your email address, because you don't have to buy, but you're going to get a lot of the best value from people just before the point where they're trying to offer you paid stuff. So I would encourage everyone to get over that. I certainly will be. Those are just crazy numbers. So now let's deal with a few more mechanical or simple questions. I mean, the first question that springs to mind, so if you're familiar with Amazon, not familiar with Shopify, it sounds a lot harder to do than Amazon. That's the impression I get. There's more moving parts. Yeah. Is that true?
I always would argue that if you just look at the user interface for Seller Central versus the dashboard of Shopify, Shopify is much, much simpler, cleaner, user interface that's intuitive and simple. I sell on Amazon too. I mean, we have stuff there. It's brutally complex compared to Shopify, in my opinion. Now, but what I think most people are asking isn't running your own website and being responsible for all aspects of it harder than Amazon? And,
yeah,
you know, so
I guess that's what I had in mind. Okay, yeah.
That gets to front-end traffic, which we've talked quite a bit about now, but it also then gets to back-end fulfillment. But you can actually hook up FBA. If you want to have Amazon be your fulfillment house, they are happy to be your third-party logistics through your Shopify sales. You just hook up FBA as fulfillment option, or you could do in-house. In our situation, my father-in-law does our shipping. He's our shipping manager. And so for the physical items we sell on our Pixie Fair site, he fulfills those. He works like 3 days a week, and it gives him a job, and he comes in and he does a great job. And so, but those are the pieces that people would generally say, well, you know, that makes it harder for me. So, I mean, you just have to decide. I don't know. I don't know the truth of either. I think each is a process of learning the trade skill involved, the technical parts, and then the business model.
I guess you've got a fair point about Seller Central, I suppose, because I'm so used to it. It is a real dog's dinner. I mean, that's just the nature of Amazon is. I don't know if that's even an American phrase. I mean, meaning it's a mess.
I don't even know what that means.
A dog's dinner. I mean, there's a few choice British phrases. It's a real dog's dinner, meaning it just looks like, you know, the dog's just eating his dinner. In other words, a complete physical mess. I mean, a Seller Central is like everything in Amazon is based on the pizza team concept, right? So it's all about warring tiny factions competing for resources, and it is a real mess. And there's some fulfillment reports which you have to dig like a detective to find, and I found most of those now. So if you're getting stuck, you know, you get yourself over to the Facebook group at amazingfba.com/FB and you know, put up the question and we could probably find the answer for you. But yeah, you're right about that. So the other thing then that strikes me, okay, so we found some traffic strategies. Obviously, if you build a massive email list, that's fantastic, and everyone's always talking about the money's in the list. I still find that to be true. Not really in my e-commerce business because it's more about Amazon at the moment, but I've found that to be true with Amazing FBA. So I can speak to that from a bit of experience for sure.
Yeah.
But how do we solve the two questions of, first of all, the conversion rate? How, once we've done your contest and you've got launched and you've got a big email list, how do you persuade people to come back and buy at a level that isn't cripplingly difficult to maintain?
The unfortunately difficult answer is, it really gets to your product and niche selection. And I see people fail on Shopify because they're trying to sell things that candidly, no one's going to go to a standalone website to buy. I mean, people go to Amazon for a reason to buy many, many things. So you have to start with a product and niche where you could say to yourself, people are willing to buy this from a standalone website. And so, you know, in our case, we were, and I guess you could say fortunate, or I don't know if it's unfortunate or what, but we couldn't sell our PDF files on Amazon in 2009. It wasn't permitted. And so it wasn't permitted for any of our competitors either. So in that way, we kind of got this lucky pass where the big marketplaces, eBay and Amazon, didn't offer customers what we were selling. So, it gets to that point where you have to say, okay, first of all, am I offering a product that's a frequently repurchased item? So, you know, is this like a wedding ring where maybe in somebody's life, they might buy two or three if they're unfortunate in love, and if they're fortunate in love, they'll buy one, or is this something that people are going to buy literally every couple days? And in our niche, what we found is seamstresses hoard fabric and they hoard patterns. And so that was, the niche we fell into. And so, you know, you want to think through that frequency of purchase, because if you've got a customer who's only, if you're trying to sell mattresses, they're only going to buy one every 15 years, your cost of acquisition is going to be insane. So this is where it gets back to basic choices, basic business strategy. And, so that's a fundamental. And so then the question becomes, okay, let's say you've got a product that actually people buy regularly, then you can add a few layers of enticement to juice that. And, you know, some of it, as I mentioned previously, is freemium content. So free information products. There's a whole, you know, wide world of categories and niches where people are actually accustomed to buying information. Auto mechanic, you know, information, sewing, crafting. There's many, many niches where people will buy technical information that's digital in nature. Courses, for example, video courses could fit in many niches that you just have to think through, would my customer buy this? The latest one that we've been is super trendy that we've really been blessed by as well is a monthly recurring membership program. So, you know, for example, we never had a monthly recurring membership program for our site. And just an interesting little story, if this is helpful. We had a product that was a video-based course that we were trying to sell called Basic Sewing Videos. And it was like, you know, good content. Cinnamon, my wife's name, Cinnamon, she really, really liked the content. No one bought it. And we were trying to sell for $19. And so, but she really thought people should be into this. Something's wrong. So we said to ourselves, how could we relaunch this, repackage it, create a new modality that customers might appreciate? And so we decided to switch it into a monthly recurring program called Sewing with Cinnamon. We launched that last March. In the first 2 weeks, we signed up 400 people at $10 a month. And then now we're over 1,000 people. So it's become a solid six-figure revenue line, monthly recurring revenue. And so that's the ultimate. I've got people who I'm connected to here in Seattle that work at Amazon, and they work on the Dash project for Dash buttons.
What are Dash buttons? That's not so.
Oh, okay. So if for many, many products now, Amazon's creating Dash buttons where you literally have a device where you push a button and it reorders on Amazon for you.
Yeah.
So you can have it, for example, in your laundry room for your Tide product or that kind of thing. So that concept of reordering automatically, when Amazon rolled that out, they had no idea whether that would work or not. And they were blown away by the popularity of just auto repurchase. And so they're rolling that out now through many, many, many of their brands. And so you want to start to think like that, like how could I get people to rebuy? How could I create recurring payments? How could I incent people to come back every week? First, get them to your site and then offer them something. How do you do that? Again, contest is the way that you can systematically do that. But those are the challenges you want to start to dig into to think about conversion and how to get people to repeat buy. Yeah.
Okay, it makes a lot of sense. Now, couple of questions. I know you're working with some quite serious sort of seven figure or so Shopify sellers. Yeah. Is there a comment? Obviously, this guy, is it Phil?
Pat Meyer
did an amazing job. But is there something that those guys are doing that are doing well that they have in common, would you say? Is there a commonality apart from the contest thing, which seems like a good tactic?
Yeah.
But I would call it a tactic possibly more than a strategy in some ways.
Sure.
I mean, it's a big tactic, bigger scale than just Facebook ads or something. But still, what are they doing that's bigger than that has enabled them to grow?
I think it goes back to, not to kind of rehash what we've talked about a little bit, it does go back to focus. The veteran sellers that we work with, when we talk to them, they'll say, oh yeah, and I've been doing this for 15 years. I've been doing this for 10 years. Or they'll say, I was a product guy for a long time, and then I started selling online. So, you know, with no disrespect to the, hey, launch a Shopify store and in 6 months you'll make $1 million. Generally speaking, the veterans that we work with are veterans that, you know, they've gotten there the hard way. And so there is no, like, you know, green newbie idiot that stumbled into their success in our community of top sellers. They're people who just play the part of a mature online seller. They've built their brand. They know their numbers. They know how to acquire. They know what their website works like. And they've, through, I guess you could call a long obedience in the same direction, you know, grinded it out to achieve their selling outcome. And to me, that the niche is not important so much because they're in very, very different niches. But the commonality is they stuck with it. They focused. They've really drilled into their niche. And you know, on the opposite end of that, I will regularly talk to people at conferences or people who are new to our programs, and we do welcome calls for new people. And I'll say, hey, you have private label product? Yeah, we do. And I'll say, well, tell me about your sales. How long you been doing it? I'm like, they'll say something like this. Well, I'm not sure this is really what I'm going to stick with for the long term, but I'm selling a lot of units of this certain thing. And so their emotional investment in their actual brand, in their actual product, in their actual niche is paper thin. And so, you know, that's the opposite end of the spectrum. And the seven-figure folks are just totally, they're like a business person who's run an online business for a good amount of time and is happy to talk about their details. Yeah.
It's very interesting you were saying that. And I think that sort of neatly wraps up really what we were saying before about the, you know, at the beginning of the interview, really, with the whole emotional relationship with Amazon and an Amazon-type business or even a physical products business as a whole, is that actually, you know, for a lot of us, and that probably included me at the beginning for sure, and to some extent does now, that actually we're not that emotionally invested in the business. Whereas I guess because amazingfba.com is my business, it's not on anyone else's platform. I set it up partly as a passion project and I didn't know whether there'd be any money. I had just a feeling there's an audience there. I think I can serve them. I think I'll enjoy the process. There's probably a way to monetize it down the line. And so it has proved, but I've been much more passionate about that. And like the idea of entrepreneurship and discussing entrepreneurship really floats my boat, as you can tell. Hopefully that I find it very intellectually stimulating. There's an emotional component as well. And yeah, I can't say that I have any of those things particularly true for the private label products. Partly,
well, let me ask you this. Have you ever thought about doing a podcast for orchestra leaders or band members? Or
I've considered it and I suppose dismissed it as it isn't a sort of straightforward sort of, what's the word, very proven, very talked about business model like Amazon private label is selling. But it is something I've considered and sort of toyed with and then kind of, worry about sometimes because it's not necessarily kind of, I feel like it's going to be, what's the word? What stopped me before? It's something I considered many years ago, and I guess it was more about websites then.
Well, let me encourage you to consider your unique superpower. Mm. One of those skills is obviously this podcasting. It's not easy to do. For goodness sakes, it's hard work to do podcasts and get them going. And so, you know, if you brought that to the orchestra, you know, products space, how many other marketers out there would be using that methodology? I can almost like guarantee it's probably zero.
Yeah.
So there you go. I mean, it's just a thought. How you add value to your own website, your Shopify site, to sell people product. Maybe a podcast content piece is who knows? I mean, they like to listen to stuff. I know that's true about musicians.
That's true. And I guess what we're saying is that we're sort of been knocking around the same theme, which is really coming down to, I guess, owning your brand, or to put it the other way around, to start something in the knowledge it's going to take you some time and effort before it really gets somewhere, quite possibly, and to start something that you have enough passion and connection with to see through, that you're willing, not only willing, as you said at the beginning, to echo your words, not just willing, but passionate to put your own name to be associated with. And I guess to grow up and actually create a real brand, not in the sense of something you can flip quickly and hope that you know, that the business window opportunity holds for long enough, but something you're really going to grow over time. And I think it's weird to me, and I wish it weren't true, that how much of this is actually at the emotional level when I look honestly at myself, and when I look honestly at the people that I coach and mentor and what have you, and struggle with, and sometimes they succeed and sometimes they struggle. But I think a lot of it comes down to our relationship to our products and our businesses, not anything more technical than that.
Yeah, I totally agree 100%. There's so much of it that people want it to be about the technical difficulty. People want to say, oh, it's too hard. Oh, I can't learn to drive traffic. They want it to be about that stuff, because the real work related to what am I trying to do? Do I have a long-term defensible strategy? That's the hard stuff. And that's where people need to go if they're going to really scale up, in my opinion.
I agree. I think it reminds me of a Tim Ferriss quote, which is like, what do you have to do when you don't have to earn a living? Yeah, hold on to your ass with both hands, apparently, I believe was the quote. So in other words, what he did is the modern equivalent, you know, would be selling some private label stuff on Amazon. He basically did a sort of private label of some kind of nootropics or some kind of performance enhancing drugs for athletes or whatever.
Yeah.
Back in the day when
Brian Quicken, Google, LLC.
Yeah, that's the one, exactly. And so when Google ads were really cheap and it was easy to set up your own website. So it almost feels like you're suggesting that we can go full circle to that, except that was a sort of Amazon of its day. We are, you know, we've been talking to a lot of people about private labeling on this podcast for a couple of years, and that's my experience so far. We're kind of saying, well, you can create your own website, but now you've got to actually grow up and make it a real business. And what he was saying, I guess, is once he'd managed to get himself to the point where he didn't have to be driven by just paying the rent anymore, then he was forced to confront the bigger questions, which are just scary because they're so big. There is no one right answer. And I certainly find that scary as hell. I mean, I've been knocking around as so many business ideas in my head for about 20 years now. And the reason I haven't actioned a lot of them is because of fear, because it's not even fear of failure. It's fear of not even knowing whether it's even vaguely viable idea. Have you got any thoughts on that to sort of bring this thing down to land a little bit now?
I was in that situation for 10 years. I heard in 1998 about a guy who made $1,000 a day online. He basically created a traffic school online for the first one ever in Northern California. And the judges started sending people to his website. And I was mesmerized. I mean, I was just like, what in the world? You could make $1,000 a day on the internet? I mean, that was before Google. That was before YouTube. That was before anything. It was like AOL land. So it just captivated my mind. So for 10 full years, I stumbled and bumbled through various stupid ideas. But every time I would not have money and have to use a credit card, every time I'd get in a fight with my boss at work, every time I would have, you know, a long commute or have to go on a stupid business trip when I didn't want to and miss a family event, I would think to myself, $1,000 a day on the internet. And so, but here's my point, and this is the important point for me, at least. I never would have gotten out of that loop if, first of all, we weren't desperate and I had to make something work. Because I think a lot of times people just aren't desperate enough. And then the second piece was I realized that I was not a detail-oriented person, and that I was never going to have enough detail focus to create a viable product. But my wife, on the other hand, with her product, is literally completely and totally obsessed with quality design. And so even though it's a funny corner of the internet, doll clothes design, she was so OCD over it. It was amazing. And I was, I guess, wise enough to stop and say, wait, my product scheming for the last 10 years has been fruitless. I've got literally a spouse, a partner here who is doing something at a super fantastic level. What if I just start being the marketer for her? And so to me, I think if a lot of people are in that loop, you might stop to ask yourself why you're in that loop for so long and how you can get out of that loop. One of the answers might be a partnership with a technical expert who's really super passionate about their niche or product or industry, and you could be the marketer. That could be a path out of that quagmire, because it's super frustrating. And I was there. I know the feeling.
Yeah, I think one of the smarter things I've done again is I mean, it's great to hear you be so honest, because I feel quite similar. You can fit, if you're a more of a, in some ways I can be very, very detailed in certain areas. And yeah, that's probably like a massive neon light clue right there, right? Which areas am I detailed in, which am I not? When it comes to physical products, I find I just can't bring myself to care enough to get into the details. Now, I'm smart enough to find a business partner who's actually got an astrophysics degree, really smart guy with the numbers. He's analytical. I kind of am a bit analytical if there's a sort of marketing story behind it. But, you know, like a number like 15,000 emails for $200, that blows my mind. That's a number I can actually get excited about. I mean, like, oh my God, that's amazing. Like your $1,000 a day, that kind of number that blows my brain and makes me go, I'm going to crack this. But on the other hand, yeah, he's into, you know, spending hours getting the packaging looking beautiful and perfect. He's also got a photography background. Again, I interviewed him recently. So there's lots of things seem to be coalescing from all the interviews I'm giving. But the point is, I've finally admitted to myself that I'm not necessarily a details person when it comes to physical products and a lot of online marketing stuff. And actually, that frees me up to have the realization that you had, which is like, you know what, I'm not going to do this properly on my own, but I've found this person who's a detailed person. I'm going to get out of the way and focus on the marketing, which is my thing. And that's exactly the same realization that I've been admitting to myself that I need to have recently. And to realize also, which comes back to, what am I really passionate about? I'm passionate about communication. I'm not always passionate about physical widgets, at least certain aspects of them, but certain ones not. And I think it's good to be honest about that.
Yeah, I totally agree 100%. These are the deep kind of important questions to ask yourself that help, I think, start to point you in the right direction on the path. And then doors start to open and things start to get fun. You know, partnership, if partnerships is an answer for you, they're not easy. And many people couldn't work with a partner for other reasons. But nonetheless, I mean, it's kind of like you have to pick your poison at some point. You have to say, I'm either going to fail by myself, or I'm going to partner with somebody who gives me the potential to succeed. And that could blow up in different ways. But, you know, nonetheless, it's still better than a loop of, you know, in my case, 10 years of trying to do it all on my own. I think these are fundamental questions that are super important for every online seller, regardless of whether you're on Amazon or Shopify or whatever.
Absolutely. I couldn't agree more. And this has been a really fascinating conversation, Jason. I guess I better let you go back to your world of people who can get that many email addresses for tiny money. I mean, that's resonating in my brain. Never mind your $1,000 a day. I'm like, you know, I can tell I'm an online marketer now, because like that number of email addresses for that amount of money, I'm like, you know how valuable that is?
Yeah.
So, well, if people want to go a bit deeper, well, quite a lot deeper with their Shopify training and obviously follow up on some of the fascinating insights that you've given us, where do they go to? How do they
find out? Yeah, winningonshopify.com is our home base for all of our educational content, links to our resources there, the free materials that we talked about already. And we've got our Inner Circle program, sign up there. Our one-on-one coaching info is there as well. So we're happy to connect with people. I love hearing from people. I mean, reach out to me on Facebook, hit me up if you want. I love having conversations about this. I'm certainly happy to be accessible and available to people. So start on winningonshopify.com and go from there.
Fantastic. Well, Jason, it's been incredibly thought-provoking. And yeah, it's funny how this is the point of a real conversation. And by the way, I apologize to Daniel and Joe, who are my editors and note takers respectively, because they're going to have a nightmare with this, because it's an actual real conversation. And like real life, it's a bit messy. But I think if you have the courage to go through and be honest with yourself about what you're really passionate about and what you're not, and have honest conversation with yourself and with other people, that you know, it comes down to, as you were saying, the whole theme of this, really, our conversation, Jason, has been around just really getting behind something you can be very, very passionate about, yeah, and be in it for the long haul and be willing to messily create your real business. And it's, you know, in a world of quick fixes, and we've certainly offered enough of those in the podcast, and that's okay for those who want them. But I really think that's an incredibly powerful message. So, Jason, thank you so, so much for coming on.
Yeah, it was an honor. Thank you so much. Take care.
Great pleasure. Take care. That's it. Thank you so much for your attention. I really appreciate it. Now, over to you. First, 80-20 everything. Learn the critical few. Maybe there's one thing in this podcast that can make all the difference. Find that thing. 20% of inputs, give 80% of the outputs. Which are the critical few for you? Then take action. Imperfect action beats perfect inaction every single time. Finally, and not least, review. If you've made mistakes, learn from them. If you've made a success, duplicate it. You can't do that unless you look back. So in summary, learn the critical few, then do, then review. And then, my friend, it's up to you. That's it. Thank you so much for your attention. Speak to you in the next episode.